Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on August 6th, 2020. Today, it's a August 6th is a Thursday, all right, and which means we're getting close to the weekend, even though it's summer. I'm always excited about that. I hope you're having good weekends and good weeks, all right, as the summer rolls on by, all things considered with the pandemic, etc., and I hope you're staying healthy. We got a nice show. We got our good friend Phyllis Wolfram, who is the executive director of CASE, the Council of Administrators of Special Education, okay, which we always love talking about, always love having Phyllis in the group one, and a special treat she has brought with her from Vermont, another New Englander like me. She's the director of Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion at Essex Junction, Vermont Schools. That also includes Westford, Vermont. Okay, but more importantly, for the sake of this show, I don't know about every day, but for the sake of this show, more importantly, she's the national president of the Council of Administrators of Special Education, Erin McGuire. So it's going to be a really good show. We're going to talk about schools reopening and how they affect special education, et cetera, the implementation of IDEA, that sort of thing. It's going to be interesting. We've got to make sure these kids are taken care of. And all the kids need to be taken care of in these crazy special circumstances this year. But especially, the special ed kids, we can't let them down because they have greater needs, shall we say, than some of the other children do. So it's going to be an interesting show, and I'm looking forward to it. We're going to archive over at education-talkradio.org. We tweet over at EduTalk Radio. We Facebook, and I've been doing this wrong for a long time, we Facebook at Larry Jacobs and Education Talk Radio. Larry Jacobs and then Education Talk Radio. Either one of those will get what we put over there on Facebook. And on LinkedIn, it's under Larry Jacobs. For a long time, I thought it was EduTalk Radio over at Facebook, but it's not. That's Twitter. Okay, so it's Education Talk Radio on Facebook. If you've been going over there wondering where we were, blame me. Okay, it's that simple. I found that out the other day when I actually looked at what we're doing there. Unbelievable, right? Okay, but there you go. What can I tell you? All right, please go over and join our consortium. I do know the website for that. That's over at ace-ed.org, ACE-ED.org. That's an acronym now for the American Consortium for Equity, ACE-ED in Education. The American Consortium for Equity in Education, ACE-ED.org. It's a place where we want industry, the education industry, and educators to meet and get things done. Action. Create products, et cetera, et cetera. Get your voice and actions heard out there. All about equity. All about inclusion, all about accessibility to learning. It's important these days. It always has been. It came to the forefront, obviously, on March 13th when everything closed down. Our consortium is growing like crazy. Everything we do over there is free for educators, including a subscription to our online journal, AC&E Equity and Access, which you will really love. It's right there on site. Everything's right there on site. Join with us over at ace-ed.org. And without further ado, I'll have Phyllis come on first, and then we'll have Erin come on. Phyllis, are you there? It's Larry.
I'm here, Larry. Good morning.
Good morning to you, my friend. How you doing out there in Missouri?
We are doing great. We're enjoying some perfect weather. It's nice to be outside, and so things are going well here in Missouri.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. And, both Erin and I are New Englanders, and here in New England, it's beautiful weather all year long, including in January and February and March, when it's about 75 degrees. Right, Erin?
Absolutely, Larry.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's true. Here in Maine, where I live, close enough to you, and we're both New Englanders, and the weather's gorgeous here in poor Missouri. I understand they have winter, but we don't have to worry about that, do we, Erin?
Nope. We're all good here in Vermont.
Yep. Yes, we are. Erin, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for coming
on. Thank you so much for having me. Great to be here.
It is. And are you at work these days, or how are you handling all this? Okay.
I sure am. I'm sitting in a conference room right now, taking a brief break from an administrative retreat where we are socially distant and masked and working forward toward bringing our students back to school.
Well, for goodness sakes, you're an administrator. Don't retreat. Get back involved in the action. That's a joke. Administrator retreat. Get it? Bad joke. Okay, that's just silly. I don't know why. Hey, it's interesting. Erin, I got to ask you this. And Vermont is the this is funny, and again, I live in Maine. All right, we go to Vermont, see friends, etc. I love it over there, but you know, it's the least. I hate to say this because I'm pretty damn close here in Maine, but I think Vermont is the least diverse state in the country. All right, and you know, it's small and all that sort of thing. You're director of equity, diversity, and inclusion. How does that title fit in with what's good with Vermont itself, and in particular with Essex Junction and Westford?
I think that, you know, certainly Vermont is unfortunately a rather homogenous state related to race. And what we know is that diversity is all-encompassing of many different peoples, and we have great multilinguistic diversity. We have ability diversity. We have neurodiversity. We have socioeconomic diversity. You know, our work collectively in lifting up all people related to historically marginalized populations and historically oppressed peoples is something that we take really seriously and is a big part of my job. It incorporates the importance of working with students with disabilities and their circumstances to ensure that those disabilities do not disrupt their access, their opportunities, or kind of create ableism for them inside of their school district. And so it is a position that is widely recognized in many different spaces around diversity, as opposed to what so many people often think of as diversity, specifically meaning race. I will say that we certainly situate race as an important part of the conversation and the front of this discussion, and I actually just came from a Black Lives Matter flag raising across our school district this morning. So our work around diversity specifically from a perspective of race is certainly important, and I do a great deal of work around addressing the needs of students who have disabilities as well.
That was an excellent answer, and I thank you for that, because, you know, the same thing here where I live. I live in rural Maine, in southwestern Maine. Okay, and kind of near the New Hampshire border, all right, and we have that challenge here as well, okay, and that it's a very homogenous group, and it's hard, and you know, kids go off into the world, and it's hard to look at the news and then look at where you live, and there's not that much diversity, all right, but the world is, and we're preparing kids for the world. I think the way you answered that was just beautiful. Okay, so I thank you for that. And then the second question I have, you're president, the national president of CASE, but your title, which I find interesting, and by the way, congratulations, Madam President, Phyllis did tell you that comes with a private jet, did she not? Last year she was using it.
I'm so excited to see that opportunity show up. I have all kinds of ways that I can think of using a jet for good.
There you go. That's good, because last year Phyllis was using the jet mostly for herself. Okay, we thought was that wrong, and the CASE jet is available to the president, right, Phyllis?
That's right, and you know, I've been cleaning it up, getting it all ready. It's just one month in her presidency, so it's in the air, Aaron, in about another week.
Great.
There you go, and it'll be at Essex Junction soon. That's all we can say is soon. All right, it will get there. You know, but your title, again, director, which I think is wonderful, director of equity, diversity, and inclusion, it doesn't have the word special ed in there, which is very interesting coming from, usually says, you know, director of special education, that sort of thing. Do you find special education is the main focus of what your job entails every day? Aaron.
Sure. The work around special education is certainly a very significant part of my work. And I have been a director of student support services for 20 years in this school district. I will share that the decision to move into this construct was to ensure that we are situating equity for all students at the center of the district leadership, and whether or not this stays a combined position or becomes two positions or how that's going to work into the future, that's not necessarily known. But what we knew is that we needed to make sure that equity was really front and center of our work, and that includes for students with disabilities and the importance of inclusion and making sure that students with disabilities have their rights intact, their parents' rights are are intact and uplifted and their voices matter at the table and that they have a seat at the decision-making table. So the amount of work that I do related to special education is significant. I continue to lead in that space and have complete responsibility around that body of work. That hasn't changed. The title, I think our language that we use is important, and special education is a critical part of the work, and the reason that that is so important is about the civil rights of people with disabilities, and that's where special education comes
from. That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. Phyllis Aaron's really good. She is really good. Okay. Excellent. Wow. I'm impressed.
I can't begin to tell you how fortunate Case is to have her in our leadership and guiding and directing what's happening in our nation right now. She has a very wonderful perspective, and it's really encouraged in her school district. So she is helping to grow that perspective across the nation. And our leaders in special education, as you know, wear many hats. And Erin is, you know, just laid that out beautifully. And so for her to have this platform to share that across the nation again and bring that perspective to some people who have yet to truly understand how the diversity piece permeates our entire population of students. So we are very fortunate. You are correct.
You are very fortunate indeed. And I congratulate Erin. Tell your superintendent, your school board, et cetera, please, when you play this for me, you can just listen. I congratulate them for coming up with the title and making it an actionable job. This is one of the things that we face with our consortium. We want the word equity. We want the word accessibility to become action words. They're easy to say, but when you put the, you have to put that into action. All right, and I know by putting you in, by this position, your school board is doing just that. And I congratulate your school board, your superintendent, et cetera. I congratulate everybody for that. You're going to have a wonderful time with this, okay, and making it happen. Again, actions speak louder than words, and you're the right person to grab this. Let me swing back to Phyllis. Phyllis, they're going to be open schools. In fact, some of the places are open or will open next week, okay? What just nationally? Okay, I know it's hard to sum up nationally because every place is different. What are you hearing for special ed directors? Because I know there's a great concern for special ed kids, okay? Now, there's a great concern for everybody. Let me make that point, all right? But I've heard, I think, our district, the special ed children are coming in every day as opposed to the other kids coming in 2 days a week, you know, splitting it half and half. What are you hearing?
I think it's really varied across the nation depending on the level of outbreak that's in a particular community. So I think that that is first and foremost what our directors are looking at is, you know, what's happening with their families, and then trying to work with those individual families to determine what is best for each of those students. As you know, we in special education, we deal with that range of students from mild to moderate to severe disabilities, sometimes medically fragile. So our directors across the nation are busy putting together their plans. We have on our website for our members provided samples and resources of those that have already created plans. You know, we have some young directors out there who are in need of some assistance and guidance.
Oh, yeah.
So we're providing that support in the best way we know how. And we continue. We just had a town hall on reopening, and we're planning another one for in September for those school districts. You know, you're open now, and now what? So we're continuing to have some dialogue with those individuals. We are encouraging those people to, our directors, to follow the guidance that the CDC has put out, as well as they have to look at that guidance from their specific state departments of education as well. So we're moving ahead. The greatest concern is, and what we do hear from all of our local directors, is we want to be back in school with the kids, but we want to do it in the safest way possible.
Yeah, and you know, the seriousness of this, a lot of special ed children literally need special attention, okay? And individualized attention and all that, and that can be done, okay, much easier in person, All right. What are you hearing about remote learning with all this? And I'll get back to you in a second, Aaron, but I want to just get the national picture from Phyllis. What are you hearing about that kind of a thing? Okay, how are you going to do it? If schools close down, let's say there's a bad outbreak in such and such town, okay? The schools close down. What happens with the special ed children? What are you hearing?
I think that they'll continue to do remote learning to the degree that they possibly can. We entered into a lot of remote learning March, April, and May, and then June, those districts that were still in place. I think we learned a lot about how to do that appropriately, how to engage families. School districts work very hard at getting access to our families that didn't have access. They were delivering devices. They were delivering hotspots. So hopefully the majority of our districts now have that in place. Should we have to go back virtually, 100% in some of those areas if there is an outbreak? Many of our districts are giving choices to parents. Would they like to come to school? Would they like remote learning? What do you believe is best for your family and for your children at point in time? So it is still very much in some places that option of virtual or maybe a hybrid model where they're coming to school part-time and doing virtual part-time, or they may be doing in-person. We know that some of our districts in some of our more remote areas, one of our directors on our board is from Idaho, and they are in session, especially at their secondary level right now with all students. So, it really depends on what's happening in the community, Larry, with the outbreak.
It really does. You have another rural person in Aaron, okay, in Essex Junction, okay, which is not exactly a metropolis where Batman lives, kind of like where I live in Maine, okay, and Essex Junction is a cool town, all right, but it is, how would you describe, why don't you describe the school district, Aaron? Let's hear what you guys are planning. How many kids, rural, that type of thing.
Yeah. So we are what might be described as a bedroom community of Burlington, Vermont. We're about 20 minutes outside of Burlington, and we have 4,000 students in our school district total, so we are a small school district nationally, although in Vermont, one of the largest school districts in the state. We have about 600
students Vermont,
who are eligible for special education.
Go ahead. I'm sorry you interrupted. Say it again.
No, that's okay. So our school district is made up of 9 schools, a high school, 3 middle schools, the remainder are elementary, and then we have a tech center, so about 350 students who attend a technical center that come from 9 regional school districts from around the region. So that's the design of our school district, and our central office oversees is the majority of that, and then we have a single school board that supports the work.
Would you describe it as a wealthy district?
Because Vermont is situated in a funding structure that equalizes the amount of money provided to school districts across the state through an equalized pupil and sort of a range of available funds without being taxed additionally should you spend too much, that is not as relevant in Vermont. There is definitely sort of an attempt to reduce the impact of the common level of appraisal in our individual towns. We do have very towns in Vermont that have a lot of money and towns that have much less. And so the property taxes that primarily fund education are taken into the state and then distributed through a more equitable way of financial distribution. So our town spends approximately $15,000 per child in our budgeting process. There are a range of expenditures in Vermont in school districts. They typically range anywhere from $12,000 to $18,000. Per child.
Well explained. Good old Vermont strikes again. I wish every district, every state in the country had a system like Vermont does. So when you planned out the reopening, since as you just said, the Vermont districts are fairly equitable, all right, did you work with the other special ed directors, or did everybody come up with the same game plan? how does that work?
So, about, I think, 5 regions in Vermont, and those regions center superintendents together in small groups to try to make sure that we had some alignment regionally, and then also there's been leadership from the Agency of Education at the state level to help us forward. There is a fair amount of local control in Vermont. That is something that definitely permeates our systems, our school districts, mm-hmm. and our municipalities across the state. And so in order to have more continuity related to decision-making, superintendents often come together and work with the agency to make decisions. Much of the state has moved forward with the decision to implement a hybrid model where we are splitting the student population basically in half and having half the population in the school at one time and then half the other half at another time, while the students who are at home and not in school on their applicable days are in a remote learning environment.
And if I may, I'm just, these are generic questions, okay, not necessarily regarding mm-hmm. the special ed, but you're welcome to focus on special ed. Who, when the kids are at home, okay, and they have the 2 days or 3 days of remote learning, but the teachers are in with the other half of the kids, who's teaching those kids, okay, that are at home?
So what we're doing is we're working to design a system that ensures that teachers have time in their schedule aligned with master agreement requirements. We've worked with our association reps to make sure that there's time where students are experiencing learning in person in school and those teachers are also able to take time away to work within the remote environment. Certainly, the amount of synchronous learning for remote students is much less than what students will experience when they're in person in school.
Sure.
And they will have the opportunity to work synchronously with students during their teaching day and working to be really supportive of them around how that happens and making sure they have resources to understand that body of work and have time allocated to it in their schedule.
Yeah, and here comes the tough question. And by the way, I'm just putting you on the spot because you happen to be my guest today. Do you think all this is going to work? Yeah, do you think all this is going to work? And I say that as though you're speaking for every district in the country. Okay, and I'll say this without hesitation. We're all trying. None of us know what's going to work, okay, in these crazy times. What's your feeling on it?
I think that there are some very significant challenges with a hybrid model for families that need to be addressed by communities in order to make this work. And I would situate support for childcare and support for remote learning as prominent in those issues. Those issues were present when we closed schools in March last year. They will continue to be present in any type of remote learning where we have large numbers of students at home. There are strategies that schools can use to try and address this. For example, our school district is working very hard with our community partners to provide high-quality childcare opportunities for families who need that and making that very affordable and sometimes even free so that families are supported in the work. Certainly, if you are a single parent at home and you are the person who needs to go to work, these are supports that are necessary for this design. Left to people's own without community support, I think that these designs are very problematic. I would add and move into a conversation specifically about students with disabilities. We have had a lot of success with remote learning for students with disabilities, and there are students out there where it has not worked very well. And so where that is taking place, and we think about the importance of implementation of IDEA, our school district is really creating some flexible models around delivery of special education to address those needs specifically where remote learning doesn't work. It is possible that we may end up in a situation where the virus load is so high that no one can be together. And if we end up in that kind of situation, that's going to re-engage those very impossible circumstances sometimes. But mostly, we have had great success, and actually, we have some students students who learn better in a remote learning environment. We are engaging those students with remote learning more so than we ever have before, and it's been just amazing to watch. So really being flexible with our designs in the hybrid model, specifically to implementation of IDEA, is something I'm watching a lot of school districts do across the country. And then I'm also watching larger school districts right now move back into a remote learning 100% to start school based on viral load. And it will be interesting to follow how IDEA implementation plays out in those spaces and understand where they can be flexible and can't be flexible because of the virus, and ensuring that the spread is not created based on in-person instruction.
Yeah, we can't let things slide with IDEA because of the virus. We still have laws and regulations and emotions about this. We have to take care of this. Erin, how many special ed teachers are in Essex Junction?
We have a range of special educators, speech-language pathologists, BCBAs, and other professionals who are related service providers in our school district. And if I look at the number of people that are dedicated to implementation of IDEA, I would put that number somewhere around the number of 80.
Okay. So you had 80 people. And we're just talking special ed now, okay? And, and Phyllis, I'm going to kind of ask you nationally about this, okay? You had 80 people that and special ed, I always say this, all special ed teachers go to heaven, okay? They have nothing to worry about. Mention my name when you get there. Send me a postcard.
Of course,
okay?
They do.
Yeah, they do, man. Okay, I got to tell you, they do. But you had 80 people who were used to dealing with these children, okay, closely. And all of a sudden, March 13th, or right around there, we had to swing to remote learning. All right, how do we teach these teachers how to do remote learning? What's the professional development side? Should we hit a worst case scenario when it's all remote learning? And I'll start with Erin, then I'm going to ask that on a more national level with Phil. Actually, Erin could answer that too. Do it either way, ladies, because you're the president of CASE. Okay, so go ahead. Okay.
I actually would like to start by speaking a bit nationally and bringing it to the local level, and that is we have some folks out there who have been doing a lot of work with remote learning as organizations before the pandemic. So we have shortages in our country related to speech-language pathologists, school psychologists, special educators as well. And there are entities out there that have sort of made a business of moving forward in a remote learning environment to be able to deliver services to students in remote areas and areas where there are shortages to ensure that students have access to their education. And in Vermont, we do have shortages, and I have accessed teletherapy services and remote services to fill those needs here and there. We don't do it a lot because we are able to hire in person most of the time. But I will say that those entities that do that body of work offered special education directors some support around understanding how to do that work. And so I did access resources from those who have been doing that work before to help educators understand how we might do this body of work. It is important to note that I, as a director, experienced a wide range of skill sets in my professionals related to expecting this body
Absolutely.
Of work to be moved. And I had some folks who made that shift very easily. They were able to access Google Hangouts. They were able to access Zoom. They were able to do screen sharing. They were able to use document cameras very easily. They were able to know what mics to use and how to help families problem solve tech issues. So there were some people that had those skills intact. And then there were others who we needed to support. Our tech department did an amazing job at making sure that both families and teachers had training and support related to the technology aspects of remote learning. And then I would say that there was a learning curve related to thinking about individual student needs and how those fit into that environment. But we dove in, we provided resources, training where it was needed based on both individual students as well as the overall structures of remote learning. We provided additional technology out into our communities to make that successful. And we also saw some inequities as it related to access in remote learning.
I was just going to ask you that. Talk about access. And again, you're in a fairly rural area. I love Burlington. I know it's a good city. But, you know, Vermont can go rural like Maine pretty quick. Okay.
Yeah.
And probably like Missouri, too, right, Phyllis? I mean, boom, all of a sudden you're out in the rural area. All right. Talk about, and then actually I'm going to ask both of you again, talk about the access point. Who wants to do that? Let's do Aaron, and then I'll swing over to Phyllis. Go ahead, Aaron. Talk about remote learning.
We have Westford in our school district, which is what I would describe as quite rural Vermont. Most of it is made up of dirt roads, and the Wi-Fi access out there is really significantly impacted just by its rural nature. And so we did a couple of things. We turned hotspots out into the school parking lot in order, because we have Wi-Fi that's been ported out to the school. And we also did some hotspot provision to individual families. We had the opportunity to use our tech department to work with individual families around their homes to try to make sure that internet access was. So those are all things that we did as it related to the rural piece. We didn't do something that I'll let Phyllis talk about related to the buses. Phyllis, do you want to tell that story?
Phyllis?
Yeah, I think what we learned from several of our directors across the nation is they would send school buses out into the rural areas with hotspots so that families could access the internet in real remote sections of their communities. So a real service has been done trying everything that they could possibly think of to get access for our students and their families to the internet.
Yeah, it's interesting. And all of this, and Phyllis, I'll ask you, because special ed dollars are always stretched to the max, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And with all of this, okay, I assume this is costing more than prior to March. We have to make changes. We have to give kids. Well, what are you hearing about that in terms of dollars? Can we afford all this? I mean, like, we do have rules. We have IDEA, et cetera. We have to make sure these kids get all the education they deserve in an equitable manner. It's tough, all right? What about dollars just nationally? What are you hearing? Budgeting.
Well, yeah, what we know is that a lot of our schools are running out of money. The funding is not as accessible as needed. We know that local and state revenues have been cut even from last year's budget, anticipating even more state and local revenues being cut this coming year.
Absolutely.
And we know that IDEA is only funded at about 13% of what it costs school districts to educate students. So we're seeing more expenses with protective gear, being sure that everyone is protected, students and staff alike, when we do come back in person, some that are doing those hybrid models. We also know that we have expended in a number of our school districts across the nation additional funds for devices, for hotspots to have that access.
Right.
Actually, Erin has even shared with us some very specific data in our school district. She said, you know, if we're going to transport kids back to school in a safe manner, we need three school buses for every one bus that we've had in the past.
That's right.
In order
That's
to
right.
get students school safely. So when you think about separating students in a classroom, and if we were to bring all students back, it's almost like doubling some of our staff in some of our departments, and especially in those special education classrooms where in some of those districts, some of those school buildings, those classrooms are smaller. So some schools, depending on the weather, are even looking at some outdoor classrooms. So when you think about outdoor classrooms, you think about whether that's a tent or some type of covering and additional furniture. So additional nursing staff has been asked for across many school districts in the nation to assist with checking children, tending to those children who might not be well that day, and then taking extra precautions around those students. So the expenses just continue to get greater for our school districts right now.
And what's your feel? Let me get a little emotional here. Will we be able to do all this? Phyllis.
Oh, you know, school districts do what they do, and they love kids, and people are in the business of kids because that's what they love. So they're working their hardest to do it. I have not heard one story yet that says we're not doing that because we don't have the money.
Wow.
I'm sure districts are dipping into those reserve funds. Some of them have reserve funds to dip into deeper pockets than others. And this is probably one of those times where I believe superintendents are making some really tough decisions about how to spend money and what the future looks like. We also know, Larry, that we have a number of teachers that are not returning to the profession. And so that plays into the role as well. We know NEA did a study, and they're projecting this coming year a shortage across the nation of 450,000 school teachers. Special ed will play a large role in that number of teachers. So, yeah, we're faced with some very difficult times, but I believe our special educators are stepping up to the plate and making it happen for students.
They always do. I mean, like I said, they're going to heaven. But it's brutal out there right now. We got to go. Ladies, this was wonderful. Aaron, have fun being president. Get the jet. Don't forget the jet.
Thank you, Larry. I appreciate that.
Where will he fly into? Will it be Burlington? I guess it'll be Burlington. That'll be pretty easy for you when the jet comes.
I think I'm going to give it to somebody who needs a jet.
You're a very nice person. That's
not
very
that
good of you. Okay, that's really good of you. No, good luck this year. It's really something. And please, by the way, both of you, I'll say this just out loud. Please go over to our website. I'm quite serious about this. ACE-ED.org. We're putting together, we have put together, it's growing every day, a consortium about equity in education. Okay, and it's important voices like yours are heard over there, and all the voices, I might add, of the folks at CASE. So it's ace-ed.org. And Aaron, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but you love our magazine. And every so often, Miss Phyllis writes for us, right, Phyllis?
I do, and I've got that website posted on my weekly update. It goes out every week to anybody that subscribes to the CASE Weekly Update, Larry. So I'm doing my best to get the word out there for you.
Let's find out. Aaron, do you know about our consortium?
I do. Thank you.
Are you a member?
And thank you
Are you a
for all
member
of your
yet?
Work leadership. I'm humbled to be part of this show and to have a voice with you in this work.
I'm sitting here in a nice, comfortable office. You folks in education are going to be out there in the trenches every day during a pandemic, helping every single kid. Don't be humble by don't let us humble you. We're honored to have you here, and I'm quite serious about that. And love all you teachers, everybody, for the work that you do every day. It's just unbelievable. And in these times, I don't mean to take this too far, but it's like combat pay because there is a pandemic out there. It's scary, but we're taking care of things. Yes.
And, you know, Larry, I'd also like to give some kudos to our parents, too, who are stepping up to the plate.
Excellent.
Many of them have had to be educators in their home. We've seen lots of YouTube videos and things across our social networks that have been thanking teachers profusely for the work that they do because many of our parents have found that it's not easy work. But a number of our parents have stepped up to the plate, and they deserve some of those kudos, too. It's been a hard time all around for, I think, everyone.
Yeah, it has been. But, you know, somehow we're going to get through this. I really believe that, and we'll all do it together. So, Aaron, have a great year, okay? In one of my favorite states, I got to tell you, you're a lucky lady to live over there in beautiful Vermont. And Phyllis, I'll say the same thing for good old Missouri.
It is. It's great here in Missouri. I'm going to stay for a while, I think.
Good girl. They don't even let you cross state lines. You're such a valuable resource to the state. Okay? That's good. Okay. Phyllis, Aaron, thank you both so much. You guys stay safe, okay?
Thanks, you
Claire.
Too. Thanks for having us.
Oh, my pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So, let me cut you off there. Phyllis and Aaron McGuire is the president of CASE. Phyllis is the executive director. And to everybody in CASE, the Council of Special Education, Council of Administrators of Special Education, and to all the teachers of special ed especially, it's tough times. And, boy, I'll tell you, the best of times, you guys are something. So congratulations to you, and let's go for a good year. We'll do more with my friends at Case. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org, and I'll say it again. Join our consortium for equity, okay? Get involved with us at ACE-ED.org. Everything's free, and our magazine over there is just excellent. Okay, thank you for listening. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Stay safe.